Hi, everybody. Welcome to SEND Network's ongoing Training for Trainers resource. Thanks for joining us on our journey to learn together how to make your transformational training even better. We want to encourage and empower you to keep growing in your confidence and competence as a trainer. Now, here are the hosts for today.
Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Duncan. We're excited that you're here with us for our ongoing Training of Trainers podcast. So we're thrilled that you're with us today. Thank you for spending a little time. And with me is a new co-host, and it is Charles Campbell. So Charles, welcome to the podcast, and tell us a little bit about what's new with you. What are you learning lately?
Yeah, Rick, thanks. Well, I just came back from Las Vegas. It was at Hope Church M3 conference, and man, the thing that always hits me when I'm around Vance Pittman is my work is about spending time with the Father, intimacy with the Father, and that prayer is the work. And man, that was just so refreshing and good for me to hear him say that over and over again. Because I don't do that enough. I don't spend enough time just abiding with Jesus. And so it was just a good reminder. It was really good.
That's good. Well, thank you for that reminder for all of us. Our guest on the podcast today is Dr. Zerit Boyd. She is President and Chief Learning Officer of Max Life Incorporated, President of Vertical City Incorporated, which is a nonprofit to serve some underserved people. And then she's had 19 years of developing and facilitating dynamic learning environments. And that's one of the reasons we want her on the show today to help us with that. She's got tons of certifications. I can't even mention them all. As a coach, for example, as an emotional health consultant, a bachelor's in international relations, a master's in leadership, a PhD in human and organizational systems. Her dissertation was on her experiences in church planting, because she and her husband, Damien, planted Vertical Church in 2011. It's a church plant that's on mission in a collegiate underserved community right in Atlanta. She's consulted with teams at the North American Mission Board since 2015, most notably for us anyway, on the training side, helping us figure out how to create transformational learning experiences for people. And she helped Mac Lake design really the quadrants and the techniques that you guys have heard so much about. So welcome, Zerit, to this podcast. It's been a long time coming, and I'm glad you're on with us.
Yeah, thanks, my friend.
Woo! Yeah, right. This is great. Right. Yeah, I wanted Zerit last year, but she is hard to catch, man. She's
a fish. You can't catch her. Gotta get in the water.
Zerit, let me just start out by asking you, what made you want to become a transformational trainer?
So, Rick, again, thank you, you and Charles. Know that I love you both dearly and so glad to be a part of this training time. One of the things that I think is important is that in order to be a transformational trainer, you have to be a transformational leader. And there are, I just wanted just to do a recap of some critical behaviors of transformational leaders, which I believe translates in how you train. Being a leader from a transformational standpoint isn't about you, really. It's about how you can equip, inspire, catalyze, move others. It really repositions your place in the relationship or in the environment. So there's four different behaviors, and it really comes from transformational leadership theory that was first coined by James Downton, and then it was extended by the one that I heard a great deal of transformational leadership about was from James McGregor Burns. So the four behaviors, the first is individualized consideration, this whole idea of elevating others' higher order needs for growth and development. So when you think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you have at the bottom this whole idea of security, and then more at the top, this actualization. Like, people actually want to live out their purpose. They actually want to grow and develop. And so transformational leaders help individuals do that in a very personalized way. So no one is the same. You don't just look at people the same way. You actually engage with people based on who they are and their personhood. Secondly, the second behavior is inspirational motivation. And this is what church planners do very well. Leaders tend to do very well. That's why it makes them a leader, because they consider and value the good of the group. So how do you get people to join alongside maybe something that they didn't consider before to actually do something and make a difference together? So the second behavior is inspirational motivation. The third, which sometimes is hard, is intellectual stimulation. Getting people to look at a shared preferred future, and what are the ways that you need to innovate in order to do so? So it's not just this one person, Charles, who is the one that thinks for the group, but it's how can we collectively get the group to think differently about whatever problem, about whatever idea, so that there's movement forward. And then the fourth is idealized influence. Idealized influence. Basically, others see your model and they want to emulate it. They would see your model both publicly and privately. And I would say that because there are a lot of people that are trying to emulate individuals based on exterior factors, but don't realize there's all this ruckus on the interior side. But transformational leaders basically are phenomenal because they walk the talk and they help others do the same. So those four behaviors, I believe, really help a trainer. And for me, when I think about my own life journey, when I think about the types of people who have invested in me and who God has called me to be, it makes sense to be a transformational leader and then as such be a transformational trainer.
So is there a particular person that you look at and you go, that person is those four things, and that inspires me?
A lot of times people, you know, the way I think, how I think, it really comes from who my mom is. You know, growing up when I was a younger person, school wasn't just a place you go. School was happening all the time. So whether it be the formal place that you went to, I remember I would always be laughed at by my friends because we would, in summers, be in the house doing exercises and learning and reading. So she did not relegate my learning to a place. It was, you should always be learning and growing and making sure that that is a part of all that you do. And so, you know, when you think about just the whole idea of learning and how that impacts when you talk about transformation, where I'm always looking for and being in community with others that are like-minded that way, because it raises you, regardless of what superpowers you have. When you're in the environment where others are utilizing their superpowers, you're actually better versus, hey, this is my superpower and you guys don't have any. No, we all need to operate in our superpowerness.
A lot of times I tell people when we're doing our train to trainer retreat, hey, the secret sauce for our Send Network training lies in the four quadrants and the 12 techniques. Now, I know you and Mac Lake joined together as teammates to kind of architect that. Can you just give us a little history of how the quadrants and the techniques developed?
So it was, I believe, 2013 Mac asked me to join staff. I was one of the first staff members apart from him. And when the church planter training was developed, there of course were trainers that had to actually do the training. But as the years went by, there was a recognition that there was more equipping, more development, more emphasis for the trainers to not just train on curriculum, but to actually embody what it means to be a transformational trainer. And so the idea, he knew my background, and, you know, Mac will hey, I'm thinking about something. You know, that is the entry point into, something's about to pop off here, you know? And so I remember in discussions, you know, just thinking about, you know, how do we transform, how do we change the industry standard of how trainers are trained? So it isn't just curriculum, although curriculum is one aspect of the engagement process with the trainer and the people that are being trained. But no, does the trainer know what learning even means? Has a trainer actually experienced transformational experiences, if I could use that word again? And how do we allow them to grow and develop as a trainer and not just train? So it's kind of, it's just, it's more dynamic in the process. And so he literally was like, oh, let me show you something. So, oh, in a minute, got a, you know, piece of paper and draw, you know, and then we looked at, okay, what other quadrants, looking at the four quadrants, and then what techniques really go into that. And we literally went from, no, that's not a good wording. I know, like, for instance, strategic narrative didn't originally start with strategic narrative. The concept really is a storytelling concept, but it was like, that's not good enough because how we use storytelling is very limiting. But if you twist it and look at maybe adjusting how you actually name it and then describe it, then you actually get to what you're really intending for it to be. So we went back and forth on what are the techniques. We literally had a long list and crossed out some and reshifted some or renamed some in order to get this matrix that many see on a regular basis. And then we looked at what are the disciplines that kind of really are the underneath pad when you raise up the hood. What are the disciplines that need to be active in the life of a trainer in order to execute? Because you can do techniques, but without certain disciplines in the midst of it, then they are not as effective as possible. And really the matrix is designed as how can you be most effective as a trainer to actually get the people to learn? Because so often the trainer is excited because they delivered something, but the people didn't learn, so you failed. I mean, there's a fail in it if the two doesn't work in tandem.
So let's talk a little bit about the disciplines. I was just told by Charles that I have now achieved a new level of certification, which I'm very, very excited about. But one of the hindrances, as both of you know, for me, was managing the clock. And so that's one of the disciplines, right? Is clock management. What are some of the other disciplines that are important for us to keep in mind?
One that I think is overlooked often is note-taking, because a lot of times you're in the flow or you're concerned about if I look down, then the person doesn't think that I'm engaged, or maybe you're uncomfortable with how you write, so you don't take any notes and then you go on memory, you never come back. And really note-taking, when you talk about aha moments, when you talk about these breakthrough thinking, you really do need to take notes throughout, whether it be to be able to connect the dots for people, whether it be to elevate certain ideas that may have emerged but that may have been overlooked, or elevate ideas that did stick and you really do need to reinforce. So as trainers, it's so easy to go through a 3-day and not take not one note. That really is a travesty because you probably have missed some gold. And when you're able to capture it in whatever way that works for you, because everyone has different systems. Some can't do it on an iPad. Some can't do it on the computer. They have to do the traditional pen, or maybe the reverse, or maybe a combination. Or there may be some, I've gotten very skilled at looking at someone and still taking notes and keeping my eyes on someone, because I know I've got to capture certain things that emerge. And then even knowing and discerning, what do I capture and what do I not capture, or what do I capture at a later time? So as a discipline, it's critical for a trainer to be, from a transformational standpoint, to be phenomenal at note-taking based on you, not based on someone else, but based on what's the best way for you as a trainer. So that's one. And then one that we talk about often, even in the training, is that positive affirmation. Because you're going to see some stuff that's crazy. You know, people are going to say some crazy stuff. And how do you deal with that? How do you engage people? And then in training environments, especially when you talk about certification, there's already a level of intimidation. There's always, even if someone may come off like, I'm confident, there's still something in there like, okay, am I going to make it? Am I going to pass? And so as a trainer, you have such a great, role to play to ensure that you are affirming in so many different ways. And trainers have to do that in order to get to the goal. And that's for that person to learn.
Can you give us some examples of where you've seen that done really, really well? You know, where somebody in the context of a training environment or a certification process, you know, has just, they've taken somebody that may be unsure or not confident and used that discipline to really draw out of them.
I think about the people that are in the extremes that are in the room. So whether it be the person that's really quiet or the person that needs to be quiet, but they're really, really talkative. And being able to deal with the extremes where you're pulling out, whether it be in a private way, that individual that may not have talked. So you don't try to now, oh, go, let's talk. The person that doesn't like to talk, and typically trainers won't necessarily be that far on the extreme because you're a trainer, you've got to talk. But some really do feel anxiety with being put on the spot and they're not prepared. So how do you engage that person so they don't experience all of these aspects of anxiety, meaning maybe you don't call on them every time, or maybe you let them know on a break, hey, I'm going to call on you on this topic. I want you to come up with two or three things. So you prepare them so that when they are called on, that level of anxiety is lowered. And then you got the other person on the extreme who's too talkative, being able to acknowledge the value of that, but then putting some parameters on that person. That could be in a private setting. Hey, next time I do want you to share about this, but I'm gonna give you 3 minutes to do so. So still valuing, because I think sometimes we devalue. It's like, hey, you talk too much, so don't ever talk. And then they're like, I'm gonna talk even more, or they go the reverse. And so how do you engage even the other person on the extreme to still be themselves, but still keep things in check from an environment standpoint?
Yeah.
I know that you came to watch me at a retreat in Baltimore, and I did feel like under the microscope, and
yeah,
great Zaret Boyd is here evaluating me, and I got a very extensive report from you.
Just a few
and
pages.
It was very encouraging, yeah. But at the same time, you know, you let me know you got to manage the clock better. And also, I remember something very specific. I tend to fill up the Post-its too much. And so you said, hey, why don't you have a blank one behind? And so when you have more to write, then you've got another place to write. So those little techniques like that were very, very helpful. So you had some specific things I needed to work on, but you did it in a very encouraging way. So I want to thank you for that. How do you think our philosophy of training differs from other philosophies of training that are kind of out there?
I mean, there's so many different methodologies and models. I do say that our type of training is rare. It's rare in the educational academia space. If you think about a lot of our traditional institutions, whether it be secular or Christian or faith-based, or you have the teacher-student model where the teacher is the authority and the student is not, or you have the lecture style of learning, which goes back to the thinking that the teacher or the faculty is the authority, versus we truly are all of us are the authority. Someone just has various positions, if you will, in the community. And so because you look at that formal and those formal environments, many of them are failing. it's not working. People are leaving these institutions, are not prepared to actually do what they spent 10, 20, 30, $100,000, $150,000 to do. So you have that as a indication. And then you also have the what I call enterprise or corporate type trainings where you have individuals that have gone through, say, a certification, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 days, and they have no clue what they're doing as a result of that. And so they either don't put it to use. And so you have these wasted dollars and wasted time. And so I think what we've attempted to do is really make the training and make the, especially the trainer-trainer process, a very learner-specific, a learner-centered training with you developing your own traits of a great trainer. And how does that, customizing it for you, being able to address the fact that we all learn in very unique ways. So you talk about learning styles, you think about how the brain works. All of that are things that I think are ideals. It's like, really, we really want to do that, but the way in which we've developed it doesn't get to not even the outcome, and didn't even do it in the process. So it does, it's not fully integrated. So I think what we have and what's been created is very rare on various levels and in various settings.
So what would you say to a church planter who's busy and who's involved in our training process, and it just who has a tendency to kind of revert back to the teacher-student lecture style, maybe depending primarily on strategic narrative and directive teaching? Because I think that's what we're used to. That's the way we were trained. That's the way we tend to train. What would you tell somebody who tends to fall back into that pattern?
Two things I would say. One, observe someone who's doing it well. So being in the, and because sometimes the issue isn't that we don't want to do it. It's like we've never seen it really happen or seen it fleshed out. And so you don't have that ingrained, you don't have that learning rhythm ingrained in you to counteract what you know, what you already know. It's like you wouldn't go, if you're trying to eat well, you know, you talk about Atlanta, the varsity is like, you're not going to go there and be with the people at the varsity, which is very high in fat and cholesterol types of foods, thinking that you're going to eat well. So you got to be around people who are actually doing it the way you want to do it. And then secondly, I think it's the practicing. I think some of the whole issue with not actually reverting back is that you don't practice the newer way or the better way, or maybe more of a diverse way. So it's not like you X out what you know to, or what you tend to lean on. It's no, you incorporate what you're not comfortable with and practice and get in a safe community, whether it be your leadership or your spouse or with friends, and practice in safe environments so that when it's really does count, you're ready to go and you're more prepared for it.
One of the questions that people ask a lot, and you've seen this at our retreats, light bulbs begin to go off for people, and they go, wow, how does this impact preaching? Mm-hmm. What would you say to somebody who wants to incorporate the quadrants and the techniques into preaching? Have you seen anybody do that well?
Yeah, I mean, I know Mac has attempted whenever he teaches now or preaches, he thinks about how, because really it's not just, hey, I got techniques and I just want to use it. You're using it because you care about the people that are listening to you. You care about the people that are learning from you. And I'm not saying when you don't use them in a variety of way that you don't care, but I think there's a higher level of consideration. Like it's not just, oh, I want to say this, but no, I want them to get this. It is a shift. So often it's, I want to be the one versus I got to get them to a place that they're the one and they're walking it out. And so I think when you're able to just test it, like, man, you know, I tried a guided debrief, you know, for a minute and this happened. And so you get a win, you know, with that. Let's say this whole idea of field interview. You bring someone in via video or in person to test that out, or you do an assessment quick, you know, in your message. I think when you take it from I've got to do this to they've got to get this, then you're more open to try new things.
That's good. And I wrote that down. There needs to be a shift from I want to say this to I want them to get this.
Yeah.
That's
I wrote the exact same thing down, Rick. That may show up on a post-it someplace.
All right.
And there may be a new post-it right there. So
I've been hoping it will listen.
Yeah, that's good. It's good. Making the wall of post-its. That's really
well. I want to personally thank you and of course Mac Lake for helping us with these disciplines, helping us with the quadrants, helping us with the techniques, because it has been transformational for me, and not just when it comes to training planters and doing the trainer retreats, but as a dad, as a husband, as a person in my church volunteering. So it's really been transformational for me. So I appreciate the time to spend with you talking through these things. So thank you very much for your investment in my life. You're impacting Northeast Ohio right from Atlanta because you've touched me. So thank you so much. And thank you for spending time with us. And thank you to Charles.
Yeah.
And thank you, all of you trainers out there. Let's keep growing in our mastery, right? Let's keep getting better and better and better. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks for listening today. Our mission at Send Network Training is to equip multiplying leaders with reproducible systems to plant more healthy churches. You can follow us on Twitter at Send Network Trainers or on Facebook at Send Network Church Planter Trainers. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. This podcast was made possible by the Send Network of the North American Mission Board.